I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to music by longtime Portland musician and composer David Ornette Cherry, who debuts a new music performance piece with movement, storytelling, and installation art. We'll hear more about that later in the show. But first, Artistic Director Samantha Vandemerva of Shaking the Tree Theater tells us about creating an adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's Mask of the Red Death. It's a collaboration with playwright West, and we'll hear from actor Matthew Kerrigan, who performs a monologue from the show, and possibly more, so stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the studio is the lovely Samantha Vandemerva, Artistic Director of Shaking the Tree Theater. Welcome back.
Hi, Dee Mae.
And I said your name right, right?
Yes, you did.
Good.
You got it.
It's taken a little bit of practice, but I love your name. So, and with her is a very talented actor, Matthew Kerrigan.
Hello.
Your first time here. Welcome.
My first time. I'm already having so much fun.
Oh, good. Yes. And you know, I've seen your work in a couple of plays, one from Samantha's and Milagro,
great.
Which was, you were just, I'm going to talk about that later.
Okay.
You took great risks and it was great fun.
Thank you.
And so I'm glad to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here.
Well, first off, Samantha, I want to congratulate you on a milestone for a theater company, which is you're going to have a new space.
Yay. Thanks.
Your very own new space. I mean, you've had a new space. I mean, your own space, but this one is different.
Yeah.
And I know this show isn't at that right now, but tell us about it.
Yeah.
What is the new space like?
Well, the new space is more like a warehouse. It's just a lovely big shell with very tall ceilings. It's a very raw space. And
so you can do anything you want with it.
I can do anything I want with it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's huge, too, compared to where you've been, right?
It's pretty huge. It's 2,800 square feet, and right now I'm in 1,500 square feet. So it's a lovely change. I think it's a great next step for us. It's more of a theater than it is a studio. So, you know, of course, I'll still teach in there and we'll have wood floors, but it feels like we're...
So you're going to have the seats and everything installed?
Well, no, because I want to be able to configure it any way that I want. So I'd love to keep the seats floating still.
Yeah. Well, you're so imaginative that you need that. You need to have that flexibility. So, well, for right now, though, I want to talk about a play that you just opened in your new space. And it's your old space, isn't
my
it?
My old space.
Old space.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a farewell show for it in some respects, right?
You know it is. And
yeah.
It's so funny because I had expected all along that it would be in the new space. And it just didn't happen. The timing didn't happen because we needed permits from the city to come through. And we had a deadline of when we would move, and it just didn't happen. So we decided we were going to do the show in the old space, and I thought, oh my God, how am I going to fit this show in such a small space? But funnily enough, the space that we're in, our old space, is perfect for this show, I think.
Well, I've loved all the shows that I've seen at the space on 14th and Stark. Right now, you've just opened Mask of the Red Death. It's adapted from Edgar Allan Poe's short story, and it's a very intimate and versatile Shaking the Tree, you know, production, as from what I've heard and read. I've seen many shows where you've used it in an inventive way, so I'm curious as to how you have structured this. Is it interactive and mobile like a few of your other productions?
It's both. You come in and you're not quite sure what we're going to do with you. And I'm not going to give too much away, but some clues are that we do move you and you do sit down as well. So even it's not like Tripping Point where you moved from room to room to see each play. Sometimes the rooms come to you and sometimes you go to the rooms.
Well, the original Edgar Allan Poe story is about a plague that's called the Red Death, Mask of the Red Death. And in it, the story itself, the character Prince Prospero, the main character, is taking people on a tour of different rooms of his castle.
Yeah.
So that kind of fits in with some of the other themes that I've seen you do before where people do move about a little bit. Yeah. Well, tell us about the original story and what drew you to it? And do you follow the plot line of that?
I did the original story with a class of mine, and they had such fun. They were all girls in that class, I remember, and they had such fun creating the rooms for us.
Oh, so that was a little experiment there.
Yeah. And as I was moving through the rooms with my teaching assistant, who was Beth Thompson at the time, we looked over at each other, and we said, this would make a great play. And really, the structure of it is perfect. And you know, bringing on a group like Playwrights West felt right for this particular play because in each room you could have a different Edgar Allan Poe story. So it's kind of Mask of the Red Death provides the structure, and then we can have this kind of it's almost like, you know, a little box of different treats that you get to experience, and different voices writing those plays in each room.
So I understand sort of the how, but what drew you to this particular story?
Well, I don't know. I might have been in plague mode since One Flea Spare was about the plague.
Yeah, that's true.
It seems very current, actually.
And it's very current, and I wanted to say something about that, too. Yes. I mean, the crisis in Africa, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there has not been a dearth of plague stories, because it's historic. This one is based on the Great Plague that swept through Europe.
Although he calls it the Red Death, which is completely his, you know, made up by him.
Right.
When we were doing research for the play, we realized that it's very similar to Ebola, what he's talking about.
Gosh.
And it felt very relevant. And also just the fact that, you know, Prospero tells his guests, who are the aristocracy, you know, that they are safe and that they lock themselves up in the castle while the poor die outside of the plague.
Is it an allegory to how we deal with this crisis in this country?
I mean,
as long as it's over there, we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Until it happens in Texas or in New Jersey, and then all of a sudden,
our biggest fear.
Right.
And I think right now, everyone's really into like zombies and the sort of end
it
of
is.
The world.
That's true.
Stories, and
because it's the
is
ultimate,
very much in line
it's
with
the
that.
Ultimate enemy that you can't do anything about.
Yeah.
Really.
And it is about what happens when that is coming up with someone who just is in denial about it, which
is what Prince Prospero and the aristocracy is about.
Yeah, and so it's about, you know, masking that by saying, hey, even though this is happening, it's not happening to me, so I can throw this big party, but karma is a real thing.
It's a real thing. And and you know, the thing is, I love that you said it's the mask of, because I didn't really make that association, but the mask is denial of not realizing or addressing what's really happening.
There's a lot of, I think, masks going on in the play. And then even when the audience comes in, part of, I think, the journey that you go through is, who are you as an audience member? When you have a mask on, when you go not just to this particular theater experience, but when you go to any experience, what you're expected to go through, you don't necessarily have that safety here when you go see Mask of the Red Death.
Oh, yeah.
No one's safe.
No one's safe. Well, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm DeMay Roberts. I'm talking with Matthew Kerrigan, who just spoke, and Samantha Vandermeerva of Shaking the Tree Theater's production of The Mask of the Red Death. And if you missed any of the show, you can hear it again on stageandstudio.org. I also understand that you work with Playwrights West, which you did with the fairy tale, the Tripping Point.
Yeah.
Yes. And so how was that process? Is it very similar to that? Were there a lot of monologues, or are there more dialogue scenes in there?
This one, I didn't want to have those restrictions on it. I wanted an ensemble of actors first. So I found the actors first, and then I told the playwrights that they could have up to 7 actors in each piece, because 2 of our actors are kind of playing Prospero and Death, and then Prospero/Poe, and then Death.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it was interesting to see what they came up with. We do have some monologues. We do have, you know, one
lots
piece
of
has,
scenes.
Yes, lots of scenes. And it was kind of fun to, it was a big puzzle to put all that together and see, you know, logistically which actors could play in which pieces.
Oh, yeah. I think that's always a thrill. I mean, just being able to see that come to life so quickly like that. Well, I don't know, Samantha, if you remember, but during last season's show, was it last season of Wild Tales? Was that just last year?
Yeah.
I can't remember. I said to you, now I don't know if you remember, I said that Matthew would make a great young Edgar Allan Poe. I did say that
did
to her.
You know?
I did say that. And so I was like,
so you're the one who got me this part.
You probably were thinking that anyway, but I was just going,
no,
yay!
You planted
it. It was me. But Matthew, I have seen you in several plays, and you're such a versatile actor.
Oh, thank you.
And you really take risks in every role that you do, whether you're doing Beyonce or,
Beyonce
or whether
was
you're
a
doing
big
a serious, you know, emotional role. You have that versatility.
I really appreciate that.
And
it's
really wonderful to see that, you know, that you just go for it.
Well, I think without people like Samantha
casting you, that
I
helps
can't
too.
Take risks. Well, and also just setting up an environment and getting a group together and finding such wonderful playwrights that are giving the springboard to actors to play. And not just actors, but designers and everyone that comes aboard is able to take risks because Samantha sets it up in such a way where, you know, let's go big. And if we fail, we fail. And let's do it with glory and just...
Well, in that spirit, I would like to interview Prince Prospero right now.
Oh, I don't know.
And, you know, he's from Mask of the Red Death. Is he here? Is he here? Can we channel him?
Hello.
Hello, Prince Prospero. I'm so pleased to meet you. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. You're on Stage and Studio. And I'm just wondering how, you know, you came about to have this great party that you're going to be putting on.
Well, the idea actually just struck me last night. I was like, maybe I'll throw a party this weekend. So, yes, I thought I'll invite all the lords and ladies
are
from
there very many
across
left?
The land. There are some that look healthy enough. Only the healthy ones can come. And
well, how can you tell they're healthy, Prince Prospero?
Usually you can look right at their arms. You can tell by the hands. I look at everyone's hands as they come in.
Well, tell me about your palace.
My palace is a giant estate. We have a winery that you may frequent while you're there. I have several rooms that I've designed for viewing pleasure of the audience. Some surprises.
What room would I like, Prince Prospero?
I think you'll do well in the blue room.
Oh, tell me about that.
Oh, that's all I'll tell you. It's blue.
Oh, okay. I'm a little
that's
scared, Prince Prospero.
It's now, a ghost story.
It's a ghost story.
Ah,
oh.
She's giving away more than I would.
Oh, well, she's the director. She could do that, Prince.
I guess so.
So now that you've channeled Prince Prospero, I'm wondering if Edgar Allan Poe's around.
Bong. Bong. Consternation. Tremulation. Emptying of bowels.
Oh.
Bong. And then, after a lapse of 60 minutes, which embrace 3,600 seconds of the time that flies, there came yet another chiming from the clock. Bong. 3,600 seconds of the time that flies. Surely there's a simpler way to say that. But then again, you didn't seem to have a problem with it. Oh, were you holding your nose and being polite? Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was a monologue. I love your eye contact with me, though.
Yeah.
It brought chills to me.
I figured we were right here.
Yes,
well, that, so that's a, just a little...
Yeah.
That
do
is
you do
a
that with all the audience,
show.
Too? You
just kinda... Well, this is one show that I will say it breaks the boundaries in the way that it is a full-on... People are in character from the moment you walk in to when you go out. So monologues and certain interactions might not be as scripted or seem as scripted as before. So for me personally, there is basically, it's a night of audience interaction, a lot of improv. So the Prince and Edgar Allan Poe, their character that night really depends on how the audience is interacting with them.
Oh, I love that. I mean, there was some of that in the Tripping Point, but this sounds even more so.
Yeah. This one, the audience is a character in our play, and we didn't know what that was going to look like until we opened with an invited dress rehearsal on Wednesday. So we're still learning about this new
character. How has the audience responded?
Some audiences are very well behaved and a little frightened.
And some aren't?
And some, it's not that they're not well behaved, they're just a little more relaxed. And they decide that maybe they don't want to wear their mask the whole way through. Or, you know, and it's fascinating.
Oh, so people have masks on as they
people
go in?
People have masks on.
Oh, we missed that point.
It throws people because I think, as we were kind of saying before, audiences and people have a certain expectation when you come to the theater how you're going to be treated, and you don't have that here. And again, no one is safe. So the audience, it takes them a little while to kind of feel like, feel what they're
acclimated.
In store for. Yeah.
Just to get used to it a little
bit. But don't be afraid. Don't be
afraid. Oh, no. I really like that.
You should be afraid.
It's not a show you're going to fall asleep at. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Hopefully.
You're going to be very involved. Very involved. Shaking the Tree Theater presents Mask of the Red Death by Edgar Allan Poe and featuring writers from Playwrights West. The show is directed by Samantha Vandemerva at Shaking the Tree, and it's in the old space that's located at 1407 South East Stark Street in Portland, and the show's currently running till November 22nd. But don't wait, because you only have a few seats, right?
Yes, we have a limited number of seats.
How many do you have?
45 per show.
Yeah, that's pretty small.
Tickets are selling really fast.
I would imagine so. And that's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings at 7:30 and Sunday afternoons at 5 p.m. And there's no show November 6th. That's a Thursday. Show's recommended for ages 14 and up, and you can get tickets online at shaking-the-tree.com or call 503-235-0635. That's 235-0635. And you can also get all of that info at stageandstudio.org. Samantha Vandemerva, the time went so quickly.
I know. We'll have to do it again.
And Matthew Carrigan.
I could just go on and on.
You could, and I could listen on and on. It was a fun conversation. It was great to have you both. And, you know, congrats on a great run.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Next up, we have David Ornette Cherry, and we're going to hear a cut from his new CD, and we're going to hear about his upcoming performance.
It's not the freedom from something, but the freedom to do something that determines the direction. It's not the avoidance of tonality, consonants, meter, and everything else likely to awaken associations with the past, but the unlimited possibilities of choice.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. We've been listening to a track from David Ornette Cherry's new CD, It Could Be Different. And joining me right now is David Ornette Cherry. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey.
Hey, it's been a while. It's good to talk with you and hear your voice. You know, David, I play your CD quite often. In fact, probably several times a month. You know, I can't count. But, you know, I always love to hear your music. And now you're building a show around your new CD. And I'm so pleased to hear about that.
Yeah. I'm excited. And I'm very honored that you do that. And I'm happy about that. It just came about. It's like almost like a 30-year thing that I've been wanting to do.
Really?
For instance, the installation. You know, I don't know if you know, I'm a painter myself.
I did not know that. That's a whole other part of you.
For about 30 years, and so I get a chance now to do an installation. I went to Finland and worked on installations and paintings for my new book that's going to be coming out pretty soon.
And a new book. Oh, my goodness, David. Renaissance man.
Well, it's interesting. It's a music conceptual book of my music, but it's in the art. And it's hard to explain. But, yeah, so doing this and being in Portland and trying to different ways to present the music, And if you notice, this is an Organic Nation Listening Club. So
yeah, I wanted to ask you about the title. What does that mean for you?
Well, it's first the performance and my music. I wanted it to be organically, whatever that means to people. It means something that happens naturally, and the audience is involved in it as far as feeling that everything, they are part of the process. And the listening part comes with that, like the name of my book would be called We Hear Too Fast or We See Too Fast. That means that we don't sometimes take the time to really listen to people and or absorb the music. You know how people sometimes would play a cut, but then all of a sudden they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like go to another cut, or we go to an art exhibit and look at a piece of art and move on, you know, without really absorbing. We don't have time, as they say. But this performance is based on me growing up, storytelling kind of a piece of me growing up in Watson. I was in theater. We had a great theater drama group in junior high school and had the best musicians from the high school, like Patrice Rushen and Gerald Albright, just to name a few, Gary Bias, some great musicians. But the theater was called Young Souls.
Mm.
And we used to go travel and get a Greyhound bus, our teacher, and travel through schools and play our show, which was dealing with poetry, dance, and skits, and political skits, and featured numbers.
So you're kind of going back to those roots then, too.
Yes. And presenting my roots to Portland, but it's beautiful because we have Glenn Moore on bass and Carlton Jackson on drums and Renato Carrenta on sax, beautiful musicians who will be telling stories too in the mix. And you don't get that too often where the musicians can tell some stories themselves.
Well, and your show's really directed by Susan Banya, so I imagine she's helping you all of the storytelling as well as the movement.
Yeah, she's great at that, and I have worked with her. And also, she's great with images on stage, and we're using, you know, for the set kind of really minimal. And then we have Peter White, who's designed the lights, and he's great lighting. And Bill Bowles is helping with the set design, and he's running lights. And then we have this group called the Culturally Adrift Community Players.
And who are they? I know Greg Bielmeyer, right?
Yeah, and Dorinda Holler and Stephanie. I don't know. I can't pronounce her last name. I think it's Graf and Celine Boutte. So they very quirky in this whole thing we're going to do.
Sounds like a big cast.
Yeah, and Renee Ward, she's dancer and a poetry.
Mm.
So it's going to be a fun and then we have a special guest, and I guess I should tell everybody, Norman Sylvester, which is a great guitar player from here.
Oh yeah,
he's going to be a special guest.
Oh how nice! That's great.
So we're going to have some fun with it. We want to try to get people out, but this is something I've been wanting to do, and I think I've been here for about 7 years, and I have played with mostly a lot of the great musicians here, but I wanted to present my story.
Wow. Well, in the meantime, Organic Nation Listening Club by David Ornette Cherry, directed by Susan Banyas, runs November 1st and November 2nd, Artist Repertory Theater. And that's located at 1515 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. And for more info, you can visit artistrep.org or call their box office at 503-241-1278. And that's 503-241-1278. And I have all of that info at stageandstudio.org. So that was David Ornette Cherry, and he's doing the Organic Nation Listening Club, so I hope you will check that out. Before we go, an announcement today. Acclaimed playwright Carol Churchill's play Far Away is a grown-up, true-to-life fable for adults that centers on a love story. It's also a study of hidden domestic violence and the larger institutionalized violence. And I've seen different productions of that, and it's a short play, but it's very poignant and at times eerily quirky that has a real dystopian view of our future. And it's always so timely when I see that production.
Faraway opens soon at Portland State University, sorry, PSU, directed by Devin Allen. And the show runs November 13th through the 22nd at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m. at Lincoln Performance Hall. That's located at 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. And for more info, you can visit PSU's box office at pdx.edu/box office, or you can call them at 503-725-4612. And David Ornette Cherry, I have like 1 minute. I just wanted to ask you about any kind of final shout outs that you have about your show that's coming up, Organic Nation Listening Club.
Yeah, I just want to thank you and thank the audience who will come and come. Let's have some fun. And I'm happy to be back in Portland to be doing this. So it's been a long time since I performed. So I hope people come out.
Well, I hope so too.
Back on the road.
Yeah. Are you going to be touring this, do you think?
Yeah, I go back on the road. I've been gone for about 2 months, most of this year, and I go on train. I've been doing train travel in America now and to my gigs, which is kind of exciting. I was invited to the Robert Rauschenberg Foundation, where I can go and do art and composition and finish my book.
Oh, so congratulations on that. And I have these images of you on the train and you're playing your music to anybody, you know, who happens to be in the lounge car. I mean, that's my image of you right now.
Yeah, it's grooving. You can read. You can sit back and slow down time and read.
Yeah, that's the train I want to be on.
I'm Duke Ellington. I'm recreating that. He wrote most of his music on the train.
Oh, wonderful. Well, David Ornette Cherry, always a pleasure to talk with you, and have a great show.
Yes. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care. Bye. That's it for Stage and Studio. So thank you, Engineer Janet Anderson. Thank you so much today. And we'll have this show later online today at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. And you can like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter and studio. You can tweet me at stage, the letter and studio. Thank you for listening. Till next time, I'm Demae Roberts.